you can set your own limits, expectations, how hard you want to work, the type of income you want. And when your spouse is there, like if I was doing this on my own, or she was, you get to a comfortable level. Well, the other person doesn't really know how hard you're working because they're not with you, right? So now it's kind of like it's just this step on top of, hey, we could do this, we could do this. And it's just pushed us to grow and continuously push the limits.
Designed to encourage, empower, and educate real estate professionals by sharing best practices from business leaders that are proven winners. I'm your host, Kyle Malnati, and this is Calibrate Real Estate. Broadcasting from the Mile High City, thank you for tuning in to the Calibrate Real Estate Podcast. I'm your host, Kyle Malnati, and today we have two of my good friends, Amanda Ruckte and Aaron Ruckte from Houston, Texas. Say hi, guys.
Hello.
Hey, Kyle. Thanks for having us.
Of course. So Aaron and Amanda have become good friends. Amanda was actually a 30 under 30 in the same class that I was for Realtor Magazine in 2012. So we were both featured on the cover. And I got to meet Aaron through several of our reunions. And most recently, we saw each other in Denver a few months ago. So we all said, hey, it would be a lot of fun to join a conversation on the podcast and talk about their marriage, talk about their working relationship together. So guys, what in the world is it like being married and working together? I know that you've worked together for 9 years. You've been married 11. And I just love to hear some of the do's and don'ts, some of the pitfalls, some of the things that work really, really well. I can imagine that having your life partner in your business can be a really big amplifier, but probably have some tricky moments as well.
Well, I'd like to say that I think we have most of the kinks worked out of 9 years. I think the start was a little bit tricky to try and navigate through, but you know, we've been doing it for so long that I don't know what we would do if we didn't work together as terms of like our family and our business and everything. So
yeah, most people come home from work and have dinner and talk about their day. And at our dinner, we try not to talk about our day during the work stuff. It's more family and everything like that. But as Amanda said, she's been at this 11 years, me with her for 9 years. Where we are now, I think we've got a pretty good handle on how this thing runs and operates. But man, when we first started, that was definitely not the case. Amanda, I guess maybe to get into kind of how this happened would be somewhat of an interesting talking point. She was doing it for 2 years and had some success with it in 2008, right? Mm-hmm. Which the market was terrible. And she was doing really well. And I was in advertising. And we were sitting around one night just kind of goofing. My job was about to take me out of state, which was going to take Amanda into a new market starting at zero, with no connections. And I think it was Amanda's idea. She came up with, what about spouses selling houses? I don't know. It became a joke.
I love it. Spouses selling houses. That's perfect.
And I'm like, no joking, 2 months later, I was licensed. And a month after that, I quit my job. And
I think you're just so tired of it. But
yeah, it was, you know, real estate, you know, a lot of your listeners are in this as well. Real estate's a deal where you can kind of set your own limits and expectations. And I was in the corporate world thinking I'm doing fantastic. And my performance raise was like, oh, this is half of a house, you know? So it kind of begot that and started something pretty cool. So one of the hardest things starting off was me coming into her business, which she had kind of set up with expectations on how she ran it. And then me trying to be viable and resourceful when I didn't know anything that I was doing. So those first 6 months were, maybe this wasn't the best idea.
Luckily, we didn't have kids, so we didn't have that piece of the puzzle that we had to work out as well. So, I mean, I think also it's important to, I don't know if we would have done what we did if we did have a family, because, you know, it was a huge risk. I was only commission based. We had already bought a house, so we had a mortgage that we had to pay. And if we had a family on top of that, I don't know if we would have, you know, gone both strict commission, you know, 2 years in the business. It wasn't like, I mean, we were successful, but not, you know, where we knew exactly how much money we were going to make every month and stuff like that. And we still don't, but you know, we were baby.
No, that's very true. The timing, and it was very thoughtful and purposeful. I mean, we sought counsel. Should we do this? Should we not? What are the ups and downs of it? And I think that was the small moment in our life where like, hey, if we're going to really do this and start a business, now is the time. We didn't know what we didn't know. We didn't know how hard it was going to be. We didn't know the time it was going to take. We didn't know, the struggles between us, especially once we had like kids and how the working relationship would start. So, I mean, it just, well, that Aaron was the time.
Aaron is very risk averse, and he's very
crazy risk averse.
So, you know, that I think it all worked out the way it should have, but not after lots of.
It's been an evolution of 9 years. We'll put it that way.
Yeah,
I love it. So, you know, I hear a lot of different things in your answer, which I expected that this is a very complex, it's a very all-encompassing relationship, you know, both work and marriage, and kind of now you throw kids into the mix. So you've got a 5-year-old son, Ford, and a 3-year-old daughter, Finley. And so I just think about, gosh, you talked about risk, both being risk adverse and knowing you were going into a big risk. I think of, you know, it's hard enough to be married, period. Then yet it's hard enough to do business on your own as an entrepreneur, and combo that, you're really just diving into the deep end. But I think in a way, you also have this big purpose together. You talk about, you know, having a house and having a mortgage, and then obviously it's your family, it's your reputation, everything's on the line. And I think that those are the moments where you really step up. And I think you've got to find a way, because you know they're really, it's probably unlikely that there's going to be a way out, you know, as you start working together. So let's talk about some of the counsel you got. It sounds like you got some advice as you first started out from just different people who've done it. And then also some of the things that you've learned that maybe you wish you knew when you first started out working together.
So I guess my parents were really instrumental in me getting into real estate. My mom, before I was born, was a broker. So she knew the business and, you know, was really pushing me to go that route after college. And my father was also in sales, he's in insurance. So, you know, we talked to them a bunch about the what it would look like to be, you know, commission only, that kind of business. And they, you know, were like, you guys work hard. And so I think that, you know, you can make it work. And then we also, you know, prayed a lot with our church and stuff like that, just to make sure that we were at peace with our, you know, decision of working together and that kind of thing. So,
but yeah, I mean, there's a lot of family and friends. Hey, you guys think this is a good idea? Are we screwing up royally? And ultimately, like we said a few minutes ago, it was like, hey, if you're going to do it, you have minimal risk right now. If it doesn't work, you know, I go back to doing what I'm doing, and then we go down the road like, you know, maybe this never happened, but you get to a certain point and then that is no longer an option, you know? And so it just, every year it kind of compound on the last year, and then with responsibility and what we're doing, and feel like we're in a good place. So
I also think that that's how we have become successful so quickly, was because it was sink or swim for us. We, you know, we didn't have a fallback plan. We, you know, this was our business, both of us. We didn't have another you know, source of income. So it was, we're going to do every single thing that we can to make it work. And, you know,
I was going to say, it's a career. Like, once you get into it, it's the, you can set your own limits, expectations, how hard you want to work, the type of income you want. And when your spouse is there, like if I was doing this on my own, or she was, you get to a comfortable level. Well, the other person doesn't really know how hard you're working because they're not with you, right? So now it's kind of like it's just this step on top of, hey, we could do this, we could do this. And it's just pushed us to grow and continuously push the limits.
I love your answer there at the end there, Aaron, because your spouse is one of your best accountability partners. And I mentioned this in a prior interview that I did a couple of episodes ago with Carlos German, where we were talking about both marrying someone that we had known since our teens, basically my high school sweetheart, and he met his wife when he was 18 or 19. And from what I know about you, the both of you met in high school, you dated quite a long time before you got married. And what ends up happening is your spouse, when you grow up together, when you come of age together, really is your best accountability partner. And to have that be exponential in your business has got to be really special when you see it start to work. And so I just think that that's really cool that you mentioned it that way, that you've got this accountability partner. They know how much you're working. They're doing their thing and they're working harder too. And as a lot of couples, I would imagine opposites tend to attract, and you probably have some different personality traits that really complement each other because they're opposite of each other. And from what I know, one handles ops and the other kind of goes and does a lot of the outbound appointments and tours and things of that sort. So let's talk about how you divvy up your roles and responsibilities within your business. And then second part of the question, I'd love to hear how the home life works and how that concept works for both of you, both in business and at home.
Yeah, I guess I'll kind of start with this. It's you know, we talk about how we divvy things up, but at the end of the day, we know what needs to be done, both on the work side and the home side. I think more over than the work side. And it's just like, all right, this needs to be done, so we do it. We're in a unique spot with, like you said, I pretty much handle all our operations. I kind of run our team aspect. Contractually and all that stuff, I make sure we're in line. I handle our negotiations, to whereas Amanda is way prettier than me. She goes out and handles the buyers and makes sure, you know, everybody's having that. But, you know, for listing appointments, we're in a cool spot where anytime we meet with a new client, they're going to meet us both. I'm very, I guess you would say, what is it, right brain, where you're...
You're very analytical.
Yeah, I'm that, and Amanda's the more, you know.
Not as organized, but I can have clients who have no vision, you know, buying houses and, you know, that kind of thing is really exciting to me. Aaron, sometimes he doesn't even see the house that our clients buy until it's during the inspection period.
So. Yeah, but point being, a lot of people want a person who's very detailed, analytic, and organized to run the show. And some people, all they want to do is talk about pretty curtains and how that's, you know, that's going to look in there. So we're able to service all our clients with not just, hey, this is my personality, I hope you fall in line, this is how I'm going to work. But, hey, oh, this isn't going well here, talk to my wife, or vice versa.
And a lot of times on appointments, you just connect with people differently. And so the fact that there's two of us, usually it's a very easy, inviting appointment conversation. And, you know, I feel like we take a lot of the awkwardness out of a first meeting. We
started doing it. I mean, when I first started, we'd go on an appointment kind of separate and then be like, hey, good luck, I hope you get it. And then we started realizing, why don't we do this together? I mean, when you meet with a client, some of the most uncomfortable stuff is any type of dead air. Well, between us, I feel like we can fill a room and make somebody laugh and feel at peace and comfortable. So it's been a huge advantage to us. And normally we go on a listing appointment or whatever. The goal is, hey, do we connect on any level with this person? We have a pedigree. They know that we know what we're doing. But can we relate to them and make them feel comfortable that we can sell their house? And between the two of us, I think it's a huge advantage. So that's been something that I think has been a huge blessing for us, that there's two. I think there's a level of success just going there with a partner.
It's a great point. It's biblical if you think about it. God put both of you together so that you could multiply your efforts, which you could do on your own is not nearly as good as what you can do together. And I find this the case all the time when I'm sitting with my wife, Courtney. And one of the things that we do that's a little bit different in our business is anyone that comes to work at Calibrate Real Estate, the brokerage firm, they have a sit down with Courtney and I. Usually it's over lunch or dinner, and their spouse. And we used to call this a spousal interview, and then that felt like it was a little bit too intense. But the reality is we both operate better together. We finish each other's sentences. She understands exactly what I'm thinking. We talk about our day, obviously, every night. And so she knows me better than anybody else in the world. Better than my parents, actually, at this point, if you think about how long we've been together. I've been together with Courtney more than half of my life. And so what ends up happening is she makes me so much better. And it sounds cliche, Jerry Maguire stuff, but she completes me. And I think that the idea that you're able to just make things seem so much more comfortable together as a team when you're meeting with a client, and especially when you're doing that initial consultation to figure out what their goals and objectives are, you're helping each other out. One of you may relate better to one of the spouses or vice versa. And it just helps things out. It's like walking around your neighborhood and realizing that I kind of, work better with that person and you kind of work better with this person. And so it helps you, I think, do more business because you're not isolating yourself to only one type of personality or another. And I love the idea. I was thinking about this, that you have both fashion and function. You know, you've got the ops and you've got the flash, you've got all of you've got both parts of it, right brain and left brain married together, which is great. So how do you do it at home? How do you not talk about work at the dinner table? Because I think that's so common for so many different people. And I'd love to hear your concept on how you create the appropriate boundary of that. Work is not going to be all encompassing. And in real estate, this is very difficult for all of us. So I'd love to hear some tips that you have on actually making your work not become so all encompassing that it takes over.
Well, first off, I'd like to point out that I have been deemed as function and not fashion.
talk about pretty curtains.
I know. I'm getting the impression I'm a real bore. Okay, but no, I'm joking. It's so true though. But no, on the home front, I think it's something that has to be real purposeful. And believe me,
I don't think we figured it out.
No, I was about to say, I'm about to give you an answer that sounds great probably, but in theory, it's just not how it works. I mean, there's plenty of times where in an ideal world, I think we'd go home, we'd pick up our kids, play with them, and never look at work again. But real estate is such an after-hours business as well, where a lot of the time that's not feasible. So the huge blessing with us is that, it doesn't always have to be me leaving the room to go take a call. Why is dad never here? Or that it's, you can kind of split the duty.
And we've been working together for so long now that if we get we're mostly on text threads with all of our clients together, we know who needs to respond to what, And so there's a lot of stuff that we do in our business that we don't even have to talk about anymore. Right. And it's like what you said about being able to complete each other's sentences. It's kind of translates to work as well, where, I know my role, my responsibilities, who needs to hear from us and vice versa. So a lot of it we try not to talk about, but.
In an ideal world, I like to think that when I get home at whatever time that may be, set certain hours where I'm not looking at a phone, I'm not doing anything, and just going to be 100% present with kids and family. And a lot of times that works, but a lot of times there's deadlines where if something doesn't get executed by X time, it's not going to happen and people are going to lose money. So there are certain times where, okay, hey, I'm going to have to step out and this is going to be handled for the next hour. But our goal is always when we're there to be present for our children, to be present for each other in a non-work capacity way, and have just some downtime. Like I said, I think Amanda and I, with the business we do, I think we could spend 24 hours a day talking about business. And that would be a very non-awesome life. So it's one of those things where it's just like, hey, neither one of us want to do that all day. So I think at some point we just both kind of casually shut it down. I don't think it's like, hey, it's this time, but I think we realize, hey, I don't want to talk to you about Joe Smith's house anymore. It's just, I don't want to do that. So let's talk, let's go a different direction here. So.
Another thing that we do, which I think a lot of my friends, they get home from work and they spend time with their husband watching TV or whatever they, do after dinner and the kids are to bed. That's usually our time where we have, alone time. Like I'll retreat to my part of the house and Aaron as well, just because at some point we're together for, you know, 12 hours a day. And it's nice just to have a little bit of time apart.
That's very true. I mean, a lot of people don't spend an 8 to 10 hour work day with their spouse. So, I mean, it definitely happens. It goes both ways in that regard.
All right. So I have to ask you some questions just because I need to know, and I'm a learner as I host this podcast, I'm along with the audience learning. So my wife, Courtney, is, I think, from a business acumen, far smarter than I am. And sometimes, you know, I feel like I'm selling myself short, but she really has that analytical mind that you have, Aaron. And I, you know, like anything else, when you see someone else using their spiritual gifts and you're in awe of it, when you don't have that. And so for me, I love how she just gets things from an operational standpoint. She works with the staff much better than I do. And for a period of time, she actually worked in our business and she really helped us with our marketing. And she helped us in a really tough spot where we were down a team member that had quit. And we were just in a rough spot. And so every now and again, I'll find myself calling her honey or sweetie or like what I would at home. Is that off limits for you guys? Is that inappropriate? I mean, I would assume it is, and I just catch myself like, oh, sorry. But you know, how do you guys handle stuff like that? Where obviously you love each other, you have a relationship with each other. It's a romantic relationship, but then there's also the business relationship of how do you make your team not feel uncomfortable, but also know that you love each other, obviously. So how does that work for you guys?
From knowing us and our personality, I think our team is very much aware that we are married. I mean, we're
kind of bigger like an old married couple more than lovey-dovey.
Yeah, it's a very business environment, but at the same time, it's a culture of, I mean, it's fun what we're doing, and so we'll gripe, like Amanda said, bickering kind of back and forth, and you know, we try to keep everything playful and professional at the same time, but. Yeah, I mean, there's certain times where it's, hey, this is all business right now, and you know, you need to get this done as I'm doing this, and vice versa. So,
well, you also have preschool age children, and I know from having kids in that phase of life, there's a lot, especially if you're both working as much as you are. There's daycare and there's preschool and there's all this. So, do you ever find that you fall into maybe what society, and I'm using air quotes there for those that are listening on Apple iTunes, that, you know, society expects Amanda to do certain things at home that Aaron does or doesn't do? And how do you guys deal with that? You know, in today's society, you know, I think we've got people that are doing a lot more, especially divorcees doing co-parenting. But you know, dads are involved. Dads are a lot more involved statistically than they were 30 or 40 years ago. So how do you guys kind of break some of the, you know, the typical stereotypes, and then where do you maybe fall into certain things that feel like, you know, that's what mom's supposed to do and that's what dad's supposed to do?
I think in different phases of our having kids and our business, I've stepped out a lot, you know, just because I had a newborn at home or I wasn't ready to leave the child at home all the time. And so, I mean, I think it depends on the season of our life on a lot of it. And then also we were really lucky that Aaron's mom and my parents as well are both in Houston, and they you know, have been very instrumental in caring for our kids while we're working. So you know, they've been super helpful in a lot of late night appointments, and Aaron's mom actually watched our kids for 2 days a week, and so we didn't have to put them in full-time daycare. So it's just been kind of what season of life are we in, and you know, what has worked for us. But Aaron is super involved with he drops off, I pick up, you know, it's definitely, if I'm, you know, taking clients out at night, then he's making dinner at home. I mean, it's very much a partnership at home and at work, for sure.
I think that's great, and that's how it should be successful. And I was figuring that you guys probably had some sort of like tag team on how that works, and I think that's really cool. We last saw each other in person at this event that Calibrate hosted for our 30 Under 30 reunion in Denver, and one of the panels was a working mom panel. And it's one of the things, because Courtney, she worked all the way through our first pregnancy with Charlotte. And then when the twins were born 16 months later, she worked all the way through that. And I was just amazed at, you know, she's feeling overwhelmed and she's feeling too big for her body because she's got twins inside of her and all this crazy stuff. And then we both made the decision at that point. We said, look, you know, daycare is going to be $4,000 a month and you've got a great job, but I don't think that you want to spend all day long working for daycare. You know, even if we take a dip in income, why don't you come home? And she's been home for the past 7 years. She may be at the point where she's ready to get back in the working place in the next year or so. But I think the direction my question is going is, you know, those seasons of life, I think, are really important to recognize. And I think you've done a good job of that. Do you see some other seasons upcoming as your kids start to get a little bit bigger and as you approach maybe that victory of having them in school? I mean, that's a really cool thing. And so I'm asking you to forecast a little bit, which might be unfair, but what do you think is kind of coming up the pike for you as you look at this period of time, this heavy, intense parenting these little children? Now that they start to grow up, how do you think your business will evolve?
So I think in the immediate future, we put our 5-year-old son on the team and make him start producing, you know. I think, no, but we're kind of getting into a deal where, so our 5-year-old just started kindergarten. We have a 3-year-old, and in 2 years, she'll be in kindergarten. And so those, you know, as they start school, that is 5 days a week where, as Amanda kind of alluded to it, this is the first time that they'll ever be in school 5 times a week. Like Amanda took, when our first son was born, she basically took about 8 months off. And it was such a blessing that we worked together, because there's not many people that can step away from business for 8 months and then come back into a running business. So I think as they get into school, I think it's time for us. It'll be time for us where we can start to ramp up some things that we've, you know, wanted to do as far as hiring extra people.
Yeah. We kind of put our team on the back burner a little bit when we had kids, just because it was just too much to think about. And then obviously last year we flooded really bad. And so that has kind of put us back a little bit. But now that, you know, things are getting back to normal and all of that we are hoping to grow our team more and can focus a little bit more on work and not so much, you know, the who's picking up the kid at 3 o'clock and, you know, vice versa. So.
If I can interject, you brought it up and it was going to be one of my next questions, the flooding that Houston has experienced over the past decade. I mean, if you think about just all of the different series of storms, and I have several friends from Houston at our event, we were talking to Jared Lofton and I talked to you guys about it. And I talked to Karishma about it and several people that are from the Houston area. And what is that like as a community ambassador to be basically in an industry that's directly affected by a flood? I mean, the depth of things of a recession occurring because of a natural event like that is really, really intense in real estate. So what's that been like for you? And what are some things that you've done for community outreach? But obviously, also, how do you handle your business literally stopping for like 60 to 90 days while the floodwaters recede and then all of the cleanup and all this other stuff? I sympathize with those experiences as I've heard them. And I would just love to hear your perspective on the big storms that have hit Houston over the past couple of years.
Yeah. And I think you kind of look at it as a macro and kind of see Houston as a whole when something like that happens. And then you kind of dive in on the micro level and see, you know, the certain neighborhoods and pockets that are hit by it. Amanda and I think we talked about this when we were together in Colorado. So Amanda and I, with Hurricane Harvey, we had 3 feet of water in our house for, you know, 13 days. The city was fantastic, but our community that we live in, our neighborhood, was even better. You know, I mean, people took us in, you know, donated, you know, helped in whatever capacity they could. But what people, I think, sometimes don't see is the city gets back churning quicker than
the people that were
affected.
I wrote
a contract, wrote two contracts. Well, we still had feet of water in our house, you know, because the other areas of the city that we work, you know, once the water's done, you know, those guys are out there helping, but at the same time, you know, it's still churning. And so I think people outside think it affects like our market and industry maybe a little bit harder than it does. Now our neighborhood, you know, 51% of the house is flooded. So that's going to be, there's going to be some churn there. It's going to take a little bit of time to get back to normal. But, you know, where our office sits, a week later, it was like, hey, we're back in business. Nothing has ever changed. So.
Well, and we were very thankful for that.
Absolutely.
Especially with our current situation. So
Houston is so big, and it's, you know, the landscape is such that where if one part's affected, you know, this other part isn't. And we run our business pretty much from, you know, the center of Houston to one particular outskirts suburb where we live. And there's a lot of opportunity from A to B.
Well, I think that's really comforting to know that your business doesn't stop, especially because there's little micro pockets that are worse affected. But in this last storm, you said 51% of the neighborhood that you live in was affected. And so what's that like? You've got your neighbors, your friends, your sphere of influence, the people that, you know, that they're really dealing with it. What are some things that came out of that? I'm sure there's some negative, but then some positive that came out of it from a community standpoint.
Well, I think it's been really interesting. Obviously, you know, real estate stopped for a while, but then it brought in new opportunities. A lot of people came and wanted to buy some of the flooded homes and fix them up. And, you know, our neighborhood is really special. And so I think people saw it as an opportunity to get in and move there. So a lot of it's been surprising.
I think we'll be the only, like, we're one of the only neighborhoods that was built in the 60s where now, you know, 51% of those homes will be remodeled homes. So, you know, I think in the short, values are going to take a hit, but in, you know, in a year or two, I think, and I mean, look, we're a little bit a year removed and we're already starting to see the neighborhood flourish again. There's some, you know, new construction opportunities coming in. There's some people that, you know, have moved out of the neighborhood because I'll never deal with this again. But I think in the grand scheme of things, it'll net as a positive, hopefully.
Well, that's great. And Aaron, as I think about you being maybe more on the ops side of your business and talking about the flood and the fact that you're writing two contracts, and that's one of the primary responsibilities that you have for your team, in addition to running the brokerage team. It's amazing that you can write contracts when flood waters are literally still receding. And just, I think about some of the benefits that we experience as realtors today versus, you know, like we were talking about, Amanda got in the business 11 years ago. I got in the business 13 years ago. I remember signing contracts like on the back of a hood of a car. They were still printed with a computer, of course, but I remember faxing documents at the beginning of my career. And so let's talk about some business technology advances that have helped you, but then also some life advances in technology that have helped your parenting, especially since both of you are working. And as I mentioned, Courtney's a stay-at-home mom at this point. So I have the home front taken care of. What are some things that you do to make your lives more efficient using technology?
I think you kind of hit the nail on the head with, you know, contractually and, you know, on the business side. I think as people tune into this, I think product wise is probably different market to market, but I mean, everything we do is every contract is electronic. Every signature can be electronic. I mean, you can basically get through the transaction up until closing without printing out a piece of paper. I mean, do we do that all the time? No, but it, you know, it's there. So in times like that, where things aren't readily available, you're still able to do what you need to do. So I think business-wise, it has just gotten easier and easier to get from A to B every year. I feel like every year we do this, something else comes out that makes our life a little bit easier. I mean, even from the marketing side now, we have a program that basically takes, you know, once we have a listing in, we run through one portal and we order and do every bit of marketing collateral from there through one company, one person, everything else. So, I mean, it's just, everything is kind of streamlined into ease and efficiency. In terms of the home front, you know, business technology is still a little bit easier than, you know, technology on the home front, but, you know, we try to, and I think a lot of people who are entrepreneurs and who value their time, who don't have let me walk that back, not say value their time, but people who don't have a set schedule, 8 to 5, people who are commission-based and people who say, if I don't do this, I don't get paid. We have kind of taken a look at our life and said, all right, well, is this worth my time to be, I don't know, cutting the grass? Am I more valuable doing something else or spending time with my family to where, you know, if this takes 2 hours, could I allocate that somewhere else? That said, right now we flooded. I don't have a yard to cut, but you know, it just things like that. That is you're going through.
We don't have a yard to cut, but we also don't have a home office.
Right.
We're in a really small rental.
Right.
And so that has been the biggest challenge. Is, you know, kids are running around and we're working at night, and we don't have a door to shut to go talk to a client. So you'll often see us like out in the courtyard of our complex, yeah, on our phone and using that as a home office. But I mean, I think we're flexible enough that, you know, and there's two of us. And so if something needs to be done, if we need to go grocery shop, then one of us is going to go pick up the kids. And, you know, we both know what we have that day for, you know, work-wise. And so it's just a matter of just being a team.
And you talk about the rental. I seem to remember a story about how quickly rental properties were getting snapped up as the flood was happening. What was that like for you both? I mean, obviously your business is got some stuff going on with, you know, real estate related floods, but then also you're relocating your family, you know, to try to make sure that you guys are safe. So what was that like? I remember the story was really, really interesting.
Yeah, it was a little bit of panic, right? But I also say to you, and I'll get into that, we were also in a place where we have families scattered out throughout the city, a lot of family that wasn't affected. So we always knew, hey, worst case scenario, I'm not going to be homeless. And I fully get that we were in a position that a lot of people weren't in during that. So where I say panic, I mean, it was, look, I wanted a place close to my house, close to my work that, you know, we're building our, we tore down and we're building. So we knew that it was going to be, you know, longer than 12 months, but could we have had somewhere to go if we needed to? Yes. That said, as we were trying to get into a rental, I remember the first Wednesday we went to a particular complex and we had heard, oh, you know, before Harvey, it was probably 50% vacancy or occupied. We get there and it said the rent's this. And I was like, oh, that's a little bit more than I want to pay.
I'm just shopping.
Yeah, no, I'm kind of testing the waters right now. We'll see. So, you know, we go back and at this time we were actually living with my mother and father. So we said the next day we'll go out and check out a few more. And like, oh, these seem to be priced from the first ones we looked at. Let's go back to the first one. Well, the first one was $300 higher than it was yesterday. So we're like, huh, well, let's think about it another night. That's probably a good idea. So the next night we go, it's another $300 higher. And now there's no, you know, there's nothing available. It was kind of that deal of where, you know, in a lot of these complexes are just, it's all computer based. As you know, inventory tightens, the rates go up. And that's exactly what happened. And then it got to the point, well, all right, there's nothing available. And, you know, because we're in the industry we are, we were able to, it was such a blessing that we did that, because the place that we're in right now, it fits our family. It's
so much more comfortable. Yeah, it's bigger and, you know, but it was never listed. I resorted to looking at stuff that had been leased a year prior and then reaching out to those people and seeing if they were going to be moving out. And so we found something that wasn't listed, thank goodness, because
yeah.
We'd still be living with your mom.
That's right.
So, but you used your gifting in outreach and prospecting.
Yep.
You used to
right.
Do.
Yeah. I was like, this is what we
found
do.
A solution. That's so cool. And I also appreciate your sense of gratitude. You know, a lot of people could take that situation and be, you know, appropriately really disappointed, appropriately really downtrodden. And I love that you said, look, there's so many other people that we've seen that have had it worse. We have family, we're fortunate, everybody's close by, and we found a solution. So I really appreciate that from you. You know, I think that there are a lot of memorable experiences, and we've been talking about obviously Hurricane Harvey and what that was like. But what are some real positive, memorable experiences throughout your career of working together? Some accolades that you've achieved as a team, or some, you know, real high points, some mountaintop experiences that you had in the industry?
Well, obviously, the 30 Under 30 was a huge honor that sticks out in our mind, as I'm sure it is with most of the people that you speak with. And then you know, we've gotten some recognition in Houston within our company, which has also been really exciting. But I think it's also, we get to work with family, you know, we get to help people find their forever home. And I think, you know, there's not very many businesses or lines of work where you get to be helpful. And
Amanda and I were talking about that earlier. It's like, you know, we get to work with family and friends, like immediate family and friends. We have sold every sibling that we have, mothers and fathers' houses. I mean, every friend that I have ever known, basically, we have done a transaction with them. And like in Houston, you know, the oil business is huge down here. You sell a frac tank. Your mom doesn't say thanks for helping your grandma. You know what I mean? It's like, so I think a couple years ago, I sold my now 92-year-old grandma's house that, you know, that's the only house I ever knew from her, and spent 30 plus years going over there and visiting. And so, you know, being able to be part of my Nana's transaction and not having to put her with some quote unquote neighborhood specialist that nobody knows, that was pretty cool for both Amanda and I, that we're like, man, don't worry about anything. We'll handle this and make sure you're taken care of. And I think it puts your family and everybody at peace knowing that, man, they have a professional in the family that is an easy go-to. I mean, it's a big, and we take it for granted that buying and selling a house is a huge deal. It should be the thing that you probably do the most research on hiring your person that you do over anything. And sometimes we forget that until a situation like that comes up and you're like, now, you know, it's comforting for our family and friends. And we're happy that we're in a place that we can do that, I guess.
That is so awesome. And I've had the experience of being able to work with family on a few transactions, and it's just so rewarding. It's so cool. And your story about your grandma is really touching. And that's what you want to do. You want to protect your family. You want to advocate for them. And those really are, and your friends. You also mentioned your friends too. Those are the most rewarding experiences. All right, last question. Amanda, you first, and then Aaron, I want to hear your answer as well. So my favorite question is this idea of Dear Younger Me. It's the advice you wish you knew when you were 22. So before you got started in this crazy business, or as you were getting started, what's some advice that now that you know, and maybe have lived through with some hard experiences, or that adversity that we all learn from, what's some advice that you wish you knew that you could impart to someone that's just getting into the business, or just someone generally in their 20s that's learning the business world? So Amanda, you go first.
I think a lot of time wasted when I first started was just not trusting my gut. I mean, if you have somebody that you're working with that you feel is not right, or is never gonna buy, or, you know, they're so unrealistic on their price that the house is never going to sell, you know, it's okay to walk away. And this is a two-way business. You know, you are invested in this person, this client, but you know, that you can say no, and it's okay. Your life will go on. Your business will still do okay. Because I mean, there's a lot of opportunities that you may have missed if you, you know, work with somebody that you don't feel comfortable with, or, you know, might not be on the same page as you. So, I mean, that was something that I had to learn over time. Cause you know, when you first start out, you want everything to work out. You know, you don't know where it's going to take you, but you're like, I have to have this deal. And so, you know, the ability to be able to, it doesn't happen often, but you know, to be able to work with people that you feel, you know, are in the right frame of mind and that kind of thing. So.
Isn't that amazing? That no is so hard for especially for a salesperson to get used to saying, and no is a complete sentence. There's a thought leader that I enjoy listening to that says that no is a complete sentence, and you don't need to have any follow-up. And isn't it interesting how we oftentimes know the answer, but typically justify it over time spent than just saying, look, this is the way I feel, regardless of whether it's been a week or 10 weeks of working through this project. this just doesn't feel like the right fit. And I think that that is something that is a real art to learning, learning how to say no, but then also learning how to cut the cord basically by your gut feeling of like, this is just not the right relationship. So Aaron, how about you? What's some advice you wish you knew when you were 22?
Amanda's answer was pretty good. I think it's kind of in the same vein as I was thinking about that as she was talking. A lot of mine, and I think a lot of what people go through is they stress and sweat the things that in a transaction or a dealing that they have no control over, that they can't change, that worrying about things that may come to fruition in this transaction or not. I think we all still do that. I know I do to some degree, but I think it stifles growth. It stifles, what you could be doing rather than just worrying about one particular aspect of a transaction. And so, I think you take some of that unnecessary angst out from 10 years ago and you look, hey, what could we have done, right? If I wasn't so single-minded or so single-tracked on this one particular instance.
Yeah, and I think that's also a very kind of difficult dance to learn how to really be comfortable with that tension. It is so difficult to realize you only have the ability to control such a finite part of the decision. And for us, you had talked about this a few minutes ago, we become desensitized as real estate agents because of the transaction volume that we have, that this is a monstrous, it's a huge decision yeah. for someone. And it's not your decision, by the way. We get compensated based on the result, but sometimes the result may just be this wasn't the right house for me. And the idea of let's focus on you can only control, what you can control and focus on those controllables. The rest of it is just going to have to work out. And it's been amazing throughout my career when you say, you know what, this doesn't feel like the right deal for me and someone yet presses on, but then vice versa, you're like, man, this is going to work. Let's make it happen. And they're like, it's just not the right thing for me. It always ends up working out the right way. And I think if you will lead yourself to a lot of disappointment, if you try to assert yourself in areas that you really can't control. So that's great advice. One of the things I wanted to share with you before we close our podcast is some advice that I got as it relates to your working relationship and your marriage, is that think of the concept of tables. And what I mean by that is there's the boardroom table and then there's the dinner table. And the idea that dinner table conversation doesn't spill over onto the boardroom table and vice versa, boardroom table doesn't spill over onto the dinner table. And I think for you, that's what I heard a lot in the beginning of our interview, but any thoughts or ideas about that, or if that's something that relates to you as a married couple, just this concept of tables and kind of separating those two worlds, even though you obviously work together, being able to really kind of bifurcate those two situations.
Go ahead.
I was going to say, I think there's a lot of truth and validity to that. I think as much as we would want that to be the case, sometimes it's not always the case. And I think it may have to do something with the industry that we're in. Amanda and I will be sitting at the workplace, quite a bit and think, hey, oh, we got to do something, we got to do this with our kids, or like, hey, we plan vacations at work. You know what I mean? So, I mean, you want it to work that way, but sometimes just with not having a straight 8 to 5, there's a lot of stuff that we'll do at the office where we're talking about home life and then vice versa. But I think the bigger key is to not let it negatively impact one or the other.
And I think a lot of time once we get home, we don't want to talk about work.
That's very true.
And so we try everything we can not to. And then when the kids go to bed, then sometimes it starts up again, but for the most part, we need a little bit of downtime.
Very true.
So, important things may come up through our phone and stuff, but that's kind of our break from the time we get home until the time the kids get to bed. I mean, it's chaos anyway, so we can't get anything done that's important, so...
I'll tell you what, you're experiencing this just a little bit with the kindergartner, but first grade, oh my gosh, it is a game changer, and you're just a couple of years from having both of them in.
Yeah.
It is so cool, and this has been such a fun conversation. Aaron and Amanda Ruckte, I pronounced it right.
Yes.
you guys are just such good people, such good friends. I wish we had more time because I feel like these conversations can go on for 2 hours if we want, but you're both very productive. You got little kids that you got to bring bread home on the table, whether that's the boardroom table or the dinner room table. So I really appreciate your time. And I really, really am happy that we had a chance to share your story, because I know that there's a lot of couples working together in the real estate industry. And I know that you are a beacon of light for them, as their story is a little bit different than those of us, that their spouse goes to a different office or their spouse stays at home. So thanks for sharing your story and for talking to us about it. And for all of the listeners out there on iTunes, we'd love a 5-star review if that's something you're willing to do. And most importantly, if you'd share this episode, if you know someone that works with their spouse or someone that's thinking about doing that, please share that. For Aaron and Amanda, I'm Kyle Malnati. And as I love to say, we will see you around the neighborhood. Bye, everybody.